Welcome to the Hope Unyielding podcast. I'm your host, Hope Johnson, and today I'm sharing part two of a conversation with three of my good friends on why you don't have to freak out about turning 30. In part one, we talked about the true meaning of success. And if you haven't listened to that episode yet, I'd encourage you to go back, both since it's a great conversation, but also so you have the context for some of our running jokes. Because we talk about Corinne's love of horses a lot. But what was most difficult for me about turning 30 wasn't the fact that I didn't have my dream career, but that I was still single. I had dreamed that at 30, I'd be on the mission field in Russia with the love of my life, maybe with a few little ones in tow. Instead, despite my best efforts, I was as single as ever. But I know I'm not alone. Corinne, Greg, and Samantha are single as well, and we've each had unique struggles, joys, and unmet expectations in our singleness. Today we talk about unfulfilled desires, the joys of being single, singleness in the American church, and most importantly, what it means to follow Jesus in our singleness. Corinne, Greg, and Samantha encouraged and challenged me with their wisdom and perspective, and I'm so excited to share this conversation with you. Let's dive into part two.
For me, there was always this internal narrative that if you're not married by the time you're 30, something's wrong with you. And I might not have worded it that way, but there were just so many narratives, both from the church, from the culture, maybe from my inner desire, that contributed to some of that thinking. So we are all single. So my question for you is, did you expect to be married by 30? And if so, what do you think informed these expectations? Let's start with Greg.
Absolutely. It was just kind of like a thing that everyone, like, I mean, as a kid, like, you interact with kids who have parents, and parents clearly got married at some point. Probably in their 20s. So it's just kind of this foregone conclusion, like, oh yeah, I'll probably be married, of course. But nobody ever told me, like, you have to get married by 30. It was more like most people did. So I sort of thought I probably would.
So it wasn't a big dream for you. It was more of just kind of like you go to college after high school and then you get married. It's kind of the progression of things.
Oh no, I definitely wanted to get married. Absolutely. Yes. But I wanted to, moving abroad complicates this one too. Mm-hmm. So, but that's not the only factor, but it certainly complicates it. If you would ask me at any time, pretty much from when I was 26 on, and oh my goodness, so many people ask me so many awkward questions. How do you feel about Chinese girls? What? Are they a vegetable? Like, what is this? Like, wow. Do you like onions? I mean, come on. This is ridiculous.
That's bad.
These are my Chinese friends are asking me this question.
Really?
Wow. Oh, yeah. Totally. My colleagues, especially my colleagues. I work at a language university, so most of my colleagues are middle-aged women who look at me and they just think, you know what? It would make my joy complete to see him paired up with some young, beautiful person. It's like, oh my gosh. Anyways, they don't just do it to me. They do it to all their young colleagues. No, anyways, so it makes it a little tricky because either I have to find an American who's like willing to live in China for a while. That's pretty hard. Or I have to decide to not live in China. I have to be open to that, which is also a bit hard, right? Or I have to find a Chinese person or another person from another country the person from another country would face the similar problem to the American, i.e. you can't live in your own culture anymore. Mm-hmm. You have to leave it all mm-hmm. behind. And you'd end up marrying this dude who's already been there for like 8 years. Like, he already speaks the language. He's like way, like, he's gone through all this stuff and you haven't. That's going to be tough. Like, some people might think, oh, you can help her through it. I don't know if that's exactly going to be the dynamic. That, like, I imagine there will be some resentment here and there. Like, yeah, it's going to be hard.
I've seen some pretty bad marital spats about language, mm-hmm. about one that's better than the other, correcting the other
it's
one.
It's really hard.
It's bad.
It's tough. But then on the other hand, marrying into Chinese culture is crazy, unbelievably hard. So it's not something to consider lightly at all. So yeah, I definitely want to be married, but it's kind of complicated. So
how about you, Corinne?
Well, let's see here. I wasn't one to, let's just go back to the horse analogy. When a lot of other girls,
sorry, this is where's
my stallion?
Is this the most you guys have heard about horses in a lot? I mean, mainly because I was just taking crying. Care of horses for like 10 days.
That's definitely it. Oh my God.
Let's go back to when I was 12, and actually not, honestly, like Sammy, you can correct me if I'm wrong here, but we weren't really, yeah, we were writing letters to our future husbands, but I think.
Wait, what, really?
Yeah, like once we did this.
Greg, all Christian girls do this.
No, we did it, but I think it was suspicious and silly. Like, I'm pretty sure I was like, I hope you're tall and not short or something like that, you know? Like, it was New Year's Eve. Or
oh,
I mean, okay.
I do.
I have since, I feel like I've probably gotten rid of that. But anyway, so.
Oh my God.
I hope you're tall. Oh my word.
Whatever. So a lot of people, I don't know. It was normal for people to have planned their weddings or had, you know, I don't know. I grew up with two brothers. I mean, listen, you have to like pay me to wear a dress or maybe not pay me. I don't know. But you know what
pretty
I mean?
Sure.
Like, let's just say my notebook that I put together at 12 was a detailed description of how it is cost effective for my parents to buy me a horse.
You just want a horse.
No, okay, I'm not there yet. I had the dimensions for the pasture. I had like, I call up Home Depot or whatever.
I remember this.
Oh no. Farm and Family, Tractor Supply, whatever.
Yeah,
I was like, how much fencing do I need? And I presented it to them. And this was my, like, thing.
Yeah.
I mean, I was a 12-year-old kid, and that's really what I desperately wanted. And moving on from that, let's just say that it took me a while to get to the point where I was considering...
You're stallion.
Considering a man rather than a horse.
Have the money for my horse. All joking aside, this is ridiculous. Sorry.
I just when you get married, I'm going to tell your husband that he will never be your first love.
No! See, this is what I'm getting at, okay? So I obviously didn't get the horse, but I didn't live in expectation of being married, but I didn't live in expectation of not being married. Cause I was, now one phrase I do remember being said over time growing up was, they will be lining up, which is kind of what people tell you when you go to college. Mm. You know, and I'd open the door and be like, and there was no one there. And then, you know, and it wasn't an expectation. It wasn't necessarily a dream. It was just kind of like, oh, they'll be lining up. Oh, how trusting of me, you know? So college came and went. And then I think then the pressure came. And then I had to kind of get really a little bit deeper with myself, because obviously I wasn't getting the horse. You know, obviously my dreams of working on a tall ship in the ocean wasn't happening. Like I had these pretty kind of wild, grandiose dreams that didn't really fit with my growing hope of having a family. So... And now it's so funny because now both of those options are not a part of my life either. But I didn't have to give anything up though. That's what's so interesting is I want to be married and I want to have a family, just like I wanted my horse. And no plans that I make, no notebooks that I fill are ever going to make any of this come about. But it's interesting to me that it took a while for me to imagine it not happening naturally is what I'm saying. Like, it is a desire of my heart, but it did take me quite a while to realize that, oh, it's just, you know, when your cousins get married pretty young, or, you know, certain friends of yours, or, you know, and then you're like, oh, it's on next. Yep. And then things just don't happen. And then you're like, it's not until recently that I started going, oh, but it's not, I don't know. We'll get to the next levels of questioning, but yes, it is something I want and it is something I desire, but it was not a part of my childhood. It wasn't a part of my teen years. It was hardly a part of my college years, probably until spring formal, when I realized I made it all the way through college without being asked to a dance. And I was like, I put two and two together and I was like, how are you going to marry them if they don't ask you to spring formal? So you see my loves were so divided. And then how are you going to get a horse if you don't get married to a rich man?
So I guess my answer to that question, you know, I'm probably the odd one out, where I knew that I wanted to be married, but I also believed the lie that in order to serve the Lord, you couldn't be married. And or you shouldn't be. So I think it came from, you know, I had a lot of family members who I would say their marriages didn't serve them well. I saw a lot of bad marriages. And I saw a lot of women with incredible potential who were not ever going to see that because of their situation. And I'm just going to put a side note, that's not my home life. My parents have a phenomenal marriage. So that wasn't my house perspective. It was my exterior perspective. And so I'm seeing all this, and I think out of fear of disappointment, because I was like, I've also seen people get hurt, and also wanting adventure so desperately that I just decided in my teens and early 20s, I'm just not going to get married. And I'm fine with that. I wasn't actually fine with that, but I decided that I was, and I tend to be very emotionally disciplined. So I just like locked it down like Chernobyl. I'm gonna be fine. I did not even contemplate dating in college. And then when I got out of college, I went to a conference where John Piper was speaking about the Bride of Christ, and the Lord all of a sudden audibly, it was like one of the few times I've audibly heard the Lord's voice. He goes, you will be married and you will bring spiritual life. And then all of a sudden I couldn't hear him anymore. And my first response was, oh crap. I was so upset. And I had to grapple with that because I like my plans, and the Lord just unraveled them. So as soon as he said that, I'm like, okay, I need to like mentally prepare and be open to the fact that, yeah, I do have all these feelings I've suppressed, and now they have to come back up. So trying to grapple with that, a couple of years after, my mentor, who knew nothing about this, is praying over me one day, and she goes, you know that you're going to be married, and the Lord says you'll bring spiritual life. And so I've had actually... I know you're not supposed to do this. I don't know who said you weren't supposed to do it. It happens in the Bible. But I've had more prophetic words about my marriage than anyone else I know. And so for someone who was so adamant she wasn't going to get married, yes, it is something I want. And it's something that I'm learning to like make room for, because I'm really good at being independent. And now I have to think, okay, someday it's not just going to be me. It's going to be somebody else too.
That's so interesting that you believed the lie that you couldn't be married in order to serve God.
Yes.
Because I think I believed the opposite. Mm-hmm. I based my idea of ministry on two people who were really involved in my life, and they were wonderful. It was my youth pastor and his wife, and I just loved how they ministered together. I loved how they worked together, and I really kind of idealized them and idealized their marriage. And I always imagined that that was how I would do ministry, was I would do ministry with my husband. We would go abroad to Russia and be missionaries, and it would be so romantic but purposeful. And that was definitely my paradigm. And I remember when I went to Russia when I was 22 and 23, it was a really hard year because I was alone. And I remember as I was leaving, and I was like, God, I can't do this by myself. If I go back, please give me a husband to go back with me. But I was so convinced that I needed to be married in order to carry out my ministry, which is not true. And there are seasons to ministry, but I do think that that was something I believed. And that was nothing bad. It was actually informed by something very good, by a couple who had a great impact in my life, and they still do. But I also saw in the church the narrative that marriage was kind of the only option too. And this, again, was no one was going around saying singleness was bad, but everything was preparation for marriage. I mean, we grew up in the purity culture years that, you know, just wait until you're married and then you can have so much sex. It's like, you know, that was kind of the goal. That's what it seemed like. There wasn't, oh, you know, maybe you're going to be single and that's a good option. So I think that definitely informed my perspective. And then, you know, as I went through college, I went on one date in college and it was really awkward. So I went on one date in college. I didn't, well, what do you do when you get two linguistics majors together? It's but then, you know, through my 20s, I didn't date that much. I had one boyfriend, but I definitely was nowhere near married. And I had to grapple with that a lot because I had also, we're going to do this fill in the blank exercise, but I had a lot of fill in the blanks for if you're not married, when you turn 30, you are X, Y, and Z. So I'm curious, word association, what you guys are going to say. So how about we start out with Samantha and think of this as before you turned 30, you know, if I'm not married by the time I turn 30, I am
adventuring. Like it was never a negative for me. I never had that feeling of I failed or it was never a value thing because it was such a shock to me that the Lord even wanted that for my life because I had decided, oh, he doesn't want that, which he never said. I really should talk to him more and get his perspective. But I was convinced that, you know, if I'm not married by 30, that means I'm doing something that I enjoy that's super purposeful. That makes me feel like I'm walking in my full purpose. And, you know, my family, we've always had the spirit of adventure. We have, like I said, this is the longest I've been in the US for one sitting. We just love to go and to explore and to do. And so I figured, you know, I've done that by myself. I traveled a lot of solo travel when I was in my 20s. So I figured if I'm not married by 30, that's just because I'm on the road somewhere.
I like that a lot, man. I wish we had been friends when I was a teenager. You could have righted me a little bit.
Girl, if you ever hear my travel stories.
Oh, I've heard some of them. Oh, yeah. How about you, Corinne? If I'm not married by the time I turn 30, I am.
Oh, boy. Well, okay. So I had two words. All right. Somebody hold up a timer. My first word was free, which interestingly enough, kind of reveals some stuff going on in me, which probably fear of what kind of a life change it would be to be married. And it kind of also reveals that I'm a transient kind of, I don't know. So free is what initially popped into my head. And then the second word was alone. And I had to rebuke that because, no, but let's just pause for a minute and acknowledge the fact that feeling the feelings we feel is an incredibly important part of just processing what life throws at you or what it doesn't throw at you. So for me to experience free and say, dude, yeah, and then for me to experience alone and then be like, oh, those are good things to walk into and sit and say, this is what loneliness feels like. And this is something that is not the truth. Because the truth is that we are not alone. And let me just say, not that I'm gonna try and like talk myself positively out of my sad feelings when I felt that, but I have never felt more in community than I do right now at 30. Whether it's with you guys, with the group of girls that come over Sunday nights, with constant coffee dates with you, Sammy, you know, fortnights with my bros. It's like I am not, and we are never alone, ever, because ultimately we have Christ with us. So, and that's such a Sunday school answer, but when it sinks deep into you again, you find yourself saying, thy will be done. So at first I was like, free, booyah, can do what I want, take up the entire bed. And then boom, alone. Wow, you're gonna be so alone. And then God's like, neither of those are true. You're with me from the beginning and you are with me to the end. Whether you do get married and you have the children, you lose your husband, you lose your children, you get another one. I don't even know how many choose your own adventures can we have in this life. My time's up. That's my answer.
How about you, Greg? If I don't get married by the time I'm 30,
you guys are like giving these like positive answers. Like, okay, I'll just say it. Like,
is not positive.
The first thing that came to my mind was, if you're not married by your 30, you're a loser. Mm. You're a loser, and you're a loser in so many senses. You've lost out on the amazingness of marriage so far in your life, and then the older you get, the harder it is to find it. That's absolutely the first word that came to my mind. But I want to add to that and say, the word that comes to mind depends on what mood I am in.
True.
And like my moods, I don't know why lately, but lately they have been fluctuating a lot. And I think I was really depressed sometimes when I'm really depressed, that's the only thing I can think. Because when I look at my 20s are characterized by really wrestling with the fact that I would like to be married. There are even women who I would maybe like to date, but for various reasons, I've not chosen to pursue them. And I, in some cases, I've even watched them like marry other people.
Interesting.
Ouch.
Yeah.
And so there's definitely a sense of missing out. But I listened to an amazing talk a couple months ago during like the Chinese spring festival / winter vacation period. It's done by Passion DC. Really interesting series. The guy's hilarious. And he just did his description and discussion of the value of being single was very, very, very corrective, I would say, for me. Mm-hmm. So on a good day, when I'm happy, I would say I am blessed, or honestly, maybe even like lucky that there are things that I can do that I would not be able to do if I was married and had kids. And it's like, that's something I definitely want. If I get married, I definitely want to have kids. Like I've wanted to adopt actually for a long time, but you know, none of that is going to happen unless you get married. So, but that doesn't mean that you sit around moping about it, right? And that's why this talk was so good, because he's a married guy with like 3 kids under 5, and he compares that phase of life to how he was when he was single. And the reality is, when he was single, he had so much more time for other people. So mm-hmm. Here I am, a single guy in China. There's not a lot of people who can make it in China, foreigners, let's just say that. Mm-hmm. There's not a lot of people who stay here for a while because it's hard. I'm one of these few people that has somehow managed to be here by the grace of God, and I can be there for my students in a really unique way that I couldn't if I was not, if I was married. So I don't know, it fluctuates. And I think Satan definitely takes advantage of this a lot. There's, in many cases, depression is caused by beliefs about this. Or happiness perhaps as well. So I don't know. It's kind of confusing.
Yeah.
I think you make so many good points. I feel like my experience is very similar to yours in the fluctuation. I would say that probably in my mid-20s, it would almost always be the loser answer. Like I literally remember looking at people who are older than me and not married and feeling bad for them. And...
gosh.
But girl. You know, we were trained for that. We were trained for that. And I think that that's what kicks in. Like, we learned that in culture. And I don't mean American mm-hmm. culture. We learned that in church culture.
Yeah. We did.
You gave a really awesome podcast on the naked gospel. Wow, I'm not used to saying these words. And a lot of the stuff you see naked, that one.
And
you, like, you described how all these experiences in the church, which sort of framed you and focused you in that way, and I was just shocked. Because I haven't really, like, when I was in college, I didn't really go to church that much. And then over here, I'm part of a lot of different communities, but none of them have ever been that way. So I was so shocked to hear all that. But anyways, yeah.
I think that shows just how much you don't know sometimes what you're taking in when you're swimming in the water, you know, until you're outside of it or until you hear, because I was surprised when you said that, Greg, when we were talking about this, I said, really? You didn't feel that way too? So it's just so interesting. One of the things,
I think I didn't feel it because I was never part of it.
Right. That's true.
So, I haven't been in part of a meaningful, like, American church community since I was in high school, and most of the time when I was in high school, I wasn't actually a believer anyways. So my spiritual formation largely happened, some in college, but really more so in my 20s in China. So yeah, very weird, unusual place to grow spiritually. Not China. lots of people grow spiritually in China, lots of people, but for an American to be part of certain communities in mm-hmm. China is definitely not the norm.
Now, we've already talked quite a bit about these cultural church narratives, but one thing that I kind of wanted to hear Greg share about was this concept of leftover women in China, because I feel like we need that. We don't need that word here, but a lot of times I think in the church, Christian women of a certain age feel left over in a sense. And I'm just curious if you could explain that concept and what it's like in China for women of a certain age.
Yeah. You know, when you say that term, so the Chinese word is sheng yu, and yu is the word for woman, and sheng is the word that you use to refer to like food leftovers, like sheng tai is like leftover dinner. It's like pretty condescending language. Ironically, not ironically, perhaps, suspiciously, I don't know. This term was actually invented by the Chinese government feminist organization. A feminist group invented this term. Yes, I repeat, a feminist group. So why would a feminist group come up with this term? Because the Chinese government likes to solve social problems, and they view lack of marriage as a social problem, and they want more people to get married. So they create a system. They, I don't know, some person somewhere thought it up probably, but just put pressure, like external pressure. Because remember what I said before about locus of control? Mm-hmm. If decisions are affected a lot by external pressures, then you can get people to do the things you want by increasing external pressure. I don't think it would work that well in the USA as like an approach to social formation. But it's pretty, it's a hotly, it, nobody likes the term. Nobody thinks it's a good thing. Like nobody wants to be, most women that I know think that it's terrible that there's even a word for it. But unfortunately, even though they might personally dislike the concept, they will somehow end up being labeled that way. Usually the biggest source of that labeling and that pressure is the family, especially the parents. Mm-hmm. I had one friend who went to the USA to study for a year. She got back. she was, I think, 26 or 27. Within the first week of getting back, her uncle came and had a chat with her about how it was time to like start finding a guy and like, this is your role. This is what you need to do now. And why her uncle, I still don't really know. I think her parents felt uncomfortable having this talk. So they called up the uncle and they were like, hey, tell our daughter how to live her life for us. My other friend just turned 30 this year, and she went home for the spring festival and had a pretty intense conflict with her parents that is very, very, very hard. The first friend was not a believer. The second one was, didn't really matter. Like in either case, their parents were putting a ton of pressure to get married. So yeah, it's pretty intense. And I don't know why they don't apply it to men. I think there's some latent sexism, probably. The odd thing is that for me as a man who's turned 30 and is single, I definitely feel somewhat left over. So I'm not sure why it's angled toward women.
That's really interesting. I find the connection between food, expired food or rotten food, and the word, I mean, it's very condescending, demeaning, but
to clarify, it doesn't quite mean rotten. It just means it was left over after dinner.
Mm. Oh, okay.
It wasn't first pick. It wasn't like, you know, people got full and then that was what was left over. So you put it in the fridge.
Okay.
So it's still pretty condescending, but it's not as bad as you were thinking.
Okay. Well, because of it's an experience I had in Russia where I was 26 at the time, or no, Belarus actually. And I was talking with someone, she was probably about 18, and she thought I was younger than I was. And I said, oh, I'm 26. And she says in Russian, she says, "Ah, ты хорошо сохранилась. You've kept well." And that's the word you use for food that has not expired yet. She's, oh, ты хорошо сохранилась. And
that's terrible.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. And my students too, from other cultures, would feel bad for me. I especially remember those who were in their early 20s, the young women students from China and Korea. I had one who was trying to scope people out for me. Oh, there was a really cute guy at the Wells Fargo bank I just went to. You know, just
Wells Fargo.
And I'm like, okay,
I'll give him your number.
Take out a loan. You know, but my students were concerned for me when I was 26 or 27, and they were surprised. Why aren't you married? They basically said, why aren't you married? You're not weird. Like that's kind of what they said to me.
Yeah.
I didn't say it that way.
There's an assumption that only the weird people are the ones who don't get married, the ones that no one wants.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's why they're not married yet, because no one wanted them.
So this is a question I'll pose to all of you. And it's the last one I really have, because I want to end with a hopeful way forward. I really like what you've been saying, Samantha, about that not being something that you held to growing up. And I like for you, Corinne, I like what you're saying about that wasn't necessarily always in your consciousness. The horse was more in your consciousness. But for me, I definitely was always thinking about marriage. And I wonder if I hadn't grown up in the church, very thankful I did, but wonder if I hadn't grown up in the church, if I would have focused on it as much. So my last question is, do you see any unhealthy beliefs or approaches to singleness after 30? As believers in the church? And if so, how can we do better?
Yeah, I'll bring this up. I've actually been affected quite a bit by Catholic teaching on something called, Pope John Paul's Theology of the Body. Mm-hmm. And because growing up with a Protestant background, I think there was a lot missing from what we were taught about even what marriage is and what it should be, what kind of role it should play in our dreams or in our expectations for our lives. And it just amazed me the first time I heard Christopher West kind of describe. I heard him interviewed. I didn't read the whole thing, but I heard. So he's a very knowledgeable kind of lifelong student of Pope John Paul's writings, and he was just presenting even just what is the idea behind this, and obviously a word that hits me is the word vocation. And it gives purpose, and it gives beauty, and it gives, I don't know, not equality, but it singleness is a vocation. Like we've already covered, kind of ourselves and the people around us in many ways are, even if it's just subtle, are saying, what are you doing? What are you doing? You're gonna be alone forever. And Christopher West says, you're not weird. I mean, God says, you're not weird, you're not strange, you're beautiful, and you're made in my image. And it's so funny, not funny, what am I saying? Christ is the bridegroom, and the church is the bride. There's marriage imagery all the way through everything we believe in. So we are born into this world desiring and needing community. And God, even in the Trinity, is demonstrating relationship and need for community and love for others. And at the end of the day, I think an approach, I like their approach so much because I realized that marriage isn't just this thing that feels good. There's this spiritual calling. It's like, it's a sacrament in the Catholic Church. Mm. It's incredible. And at the end of all time, when Christians meet Christ, it's the marriage supper of the Lamb. Mm. So we live our lives, whether single or married or widowed or any of the above, desiring to be with our bridegroom. So it gave me comfort, of course, in the moments when I also said, I am fill in the blank, undesirable, because when God knit me together, he said, you are a part of my world, and I love you more than any human can ever love you on the earth that I created. So there's this sense where you don't discount marriage and say, well, I don't need it. I mean, we don't, but so you give it's due. You view it as this holy and beautiful thing, and I may not be partaking in it right now, but even as a single person, my vocation is to yearn for the marriage supper of the Lamb and be a part of the bride, the church. And again, a lot of even just these words didn't mean as much to me because in the Protestant church, I'm not ragging on the Protestants, I am one, but you know what I mean? Like, I just felt like they missed so much in the imagery and the beauty and understanding of marriage as, again, more than just this thing that feels good that produces babies, like, great, you know, to populate. So like, there's just, I feel like, and if you view it like that, it's Scoochy Scooch becomes your idol. It's, you're like,
your version
it's
of
so true. It's so true. It does become your idol.
It
yeah.
does.
Yeah.
But if you zoom out and say, all Christians are on a journey to this feast at the end of time. If I'm with a man, it will be with the right man, hopefully, God willing, and it will be for God. Yeah. And it will be, if there are children, God willing, maybe there won't be. If they're, you know, if they're adopted, if we're fostering any of these things, it's all a part of this holy journey to the end when we meet Christ. And so, and it helps me to view my singleness in the sense of, it's not that I'm far away from my goal. It's that I'm just on a different, but the same journey with the same purpose and the same goal, which is to fall on your knees and say, holy, holy, holy is the Lord God Almighty. You know, heaven and earth is full of your glory. That's where we're headed. So I want to do it with, I want there to be a man next to me for this journey. But if there isn't, it takes away nothing from the importance of the journey. And there we do have a bridegroom at the end of days. And now on earth, he's here, you know, in the person of the Holy Spirit. So did I even answer?
Yes, you did. That was great.
I do consider the fact that I didn't mention a horse quite a victory. So.
Well, Greg, are you going to mention a horse in your answer?
Greg, you better.
Probably not. I wanted to say, so I feel like I want to take a bit more of a practical angle, is that I think the stuff that Corinne said is the stuff that needs to be said by leaders. And I don't know if it's being said or not, because I'm not like, okay, so it's definitely being said in my community here. My little, you know, meet every Sunday in a friend's house community. It's definitely being said. And it's great. I just don't know if it's being said, generally speaking. And it needs to be said because it helps to defend against sort of extreme lies that creep into my mind so easily and quickly. And so one of the lies, I think the way that Corinne talks about understanding and properly understanding and properly valuing marriage is key. Because I think if like church communities and leaders, okay, let me get a little bit more practical then. So the first thing is, I think church leaders need to affirm the value of marriage and affirm the value of being single, both of them, and not perceive one as necessarily like not as on the way to the other. And it's very easy to slip into that if, as is the case with most communities, the majority of your people are married. That's probably going to be the case, just statistically speaking. But like, just because that's the case, I think leaders need to recognize that that is going to put a certain amount of pressure and potentially isolation on those who have either chosen to remain single or who just haven't found the person yet. And so leaders, I think, should be just more vocal about how do we properly understand and value marriage, and then how do we properly understand and value singleness. The second thing I think that would be amazing for communities to do is to integrate. And I'm going to borrow again from Hope's podcast with the Naked Gospel. You were saying that like you wanted to be part of a small group that had all sorts of ages, all sorts of families, you know, older like retirees. I think that needs to happen. Absolutely. Like I understand that if you separate your congregation out into like types, it might be easier to meet certain needs. Yeah, there's a place for that. But I don't think we're going to be segregated when we like come before the Lamb and the throne at the end of time. and I don't see any need for, in my heart, I do not want to be surrounded by a bunch of single people only. I don't think that's good for me. That is going to perpetuate a feeling of isolation. So I'd say if church leaders were to do those two things, like really present and speak in certain ways and then encourage their communities to cross-pollinate, then I think it would be really helpful.
That's really good.
Yeah.
And Samantha, how about you?
So for me, I'm actually going to take it out of the church leadership realm because that needs to happen. Everything that Greg and Corinne just said needs to happen, has to happen. But we're part of the body of Christ. We're not just a spare part. And so as parts of the body of Christ, as individuals, what do we do when we feel these pressures and we feel these isolations? And for me, like the biggest external pressure has not been my immediate family. It's what I call the church aunties. And they're the women who actually have like
church aunties. The church aunties.
Yo, they're so freaking vicious. Like they may not even know you from Job, but they're coming for your life. So church aunties are women who speak into your life and just say stuff like, why aren't they? They're the ones who are actually asking the questions that we've talked about. And sometimes they're church uncles. I've had that too. But I think that what we as individuals need to do is not feel victimized when those things happen and not feel like someone's wagging a finger in our face and saying, what's wrong with you? We have to be comfortable with what I think it's a perspective shift. And as young believers, we have to get this right now because 2020 really shook a lot of people. And what it did for me is it woke me up to the fact that what we perceive as normal and healthy and good and mature may not be the tantamount outcome that we're all pressing for. Like a lot of people ask these sorts of questions because they want to make sure that you're okay. It's like this okayedness. And in America, being okay as a young adult means that you're married, you're stable, you might be having kids. And if you're not having kids, church auntie will ask you when you're having kids. And you have a house. Like, there are these goalposts that we're supposed to be meeting, and it makes us mature and okay. But I have met 14-year-old boys who are yards and yards ahead of a 40-year-old married man when it comes to maturity. So in the days to come, as we're, I believe, getting very close to the end time, like we're in it, I believe that Jesus is coming back very shortly. The things that feel weighty and burdensome and even accusatory now, the not having the feeling of lack that's coming from inside or coming from outside, from Auntie, that needs to shift, because what we're actually, to kind of talk about what Corinne said, we're pressing towards a bigger goal. And we need to pull apart that outcome-based mentality. I am as mature as a 30-year-old who is single as someone who is married. I just have different priorities. And to be honest, this is temporary. I tell everybody that. So they're like, are you single? I'm like, temporarily. Because either one, God's going to lead me to someone, which I believe he will, or I'll be dead. So one of the two, this is temporary.
Whoa.
So I just would love for, as individuals, as young adults, for us to be comfortable not clapping back, not getting sassy, just having it within ourselves that, you know what, that external pressure means nothing in light of where I'm going and who God made me to be. And I just have different priorities, and that's beautiful.
Wow, that's great. I totally agree.
And, oh, by the way, P.S., just a quick note. The perception of singles is mostly towards women. I think I get the word harpy in the back of my mind, which is totally old English. But the idea that single women are angry, bitter, hunting for your man, lonely, all of these things are so not true. And I wish that was clearer. Like, I am single, yes. I would love to be married, yes. But I'm not lonely. I'm lucky if I get 7 hours of sleep. I'm so busy. So just surrounded by good people doing good things and genuinely happy. I get that tattooed on my forehead. I am genuinely happy.
Single with no need to mingle.
But it's okay to, like, you can still, like, to what Hope has written about before, you can still desire a good thing
right,
have it, but be okay.
Right. Yeah.
Right. You can do both. I go to extremes often. And I think one thing I did need to realize was, wow, I can still want to get married, but no, like Corinne says, scooch, scooch, scooch over to the throne. Jesus is my king. A person can't be my king. And then if I do get married someday, that's not going to be very nice for the guy I marry if I expect him to be everything Jesus is supposed to be. So whether I'm single or married, it's best not only for my walk with God, but just for how I interact with others, that I have my priorities straight.
And the other really precious thing is that we aren't kind of figuring this out on our own. And when we're good and when the idols are off, then we can go see Jesus. We are walking through all of it right here with him. And like living in that space is so important, because I have a tendency to be like, all right, let me get out my checklist and just figure my stuff out. And then I'll see you later when I'm feeling good and when I'm cleaner and better. And, you know, and that's not, thankfully, like all of these things that we're talking about, like every stage that we're in mentally or whatever, he's right there in it. And the more we spend, I think the more we spend in communication with him, whether even if it's just listening, I've learned so much just in the past few weeks where I just want to fill space, as we have already discovered on this podcast. I sometimes can't stop talking. And I've had to learn to sit silently and say, you know better than I do why I am so upset right now. And I'm going to listen to you. And, you know, regardless of what extreme we're at, because we all do that. We all, whatever it's about, we find ourselves in different stages, and he's there the whole time. So.
Well, that's a great place to end. Thank you guys so much for joining me today. I know I've learned a lot and I'm really encouraged.
Thanks so much for tuning in to Hope Unyielding. If you enjoyed this episode, please pass it along to someone who you think it would encourage. To make sure you never miss an episode, hit subscribe or follow the show on Instagram at hope_unyielding. Thanks again for listening, and I hope to see you next time.